Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson. Lori spends her days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. She talks to students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. She's here to share their stories along with other insights with you. So let's talk learning disabilities.
Hey everybody, this is Lori and welcome back to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. Today I have a special guest with me, Carol Frankenberger from Frankenberger & Associates. We met last week at the IECA conference. And if you're not sure what that stands for, it's Independent Educational Consultant Association. Am I correct? I got that right. And so we met last week and I am thrilled to have met her and have learned about what her and her group do, because I think you guys are going to be really excited about the types of services that they offer. So, Carol, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So can you just start out telling us a little bit about you and sort of how you landed in this role?
Oh, sure.
Just a brief background.
A brief background of 40 years. I don't know how brief I can make it, very brief. I really taught at a number of schools for kids with learning challenges and neurodiverse profiles. From there, I went to graduate school, and from there, I went into private practice. I knew I wanted to do direct service for kids and adolescents and young adults. And I've had a very interesting career. I've done a lot of evaluations over time. And then I became a head of a school, the Greenwood School in Putney, Vermont, a small boys boarding school, about 70 boys, which was fascinating. So I took a little hiatus from Frankenberger Associates, continued to keep it alive. And in the meantime, we were also doing things like brain training. So we were getting into some very interesting, areas in this field. And then when I left Greenwood 8 years ago, I decided to reconstitute Frankenberger Associates and make it really a service business, where we were giving direct and explicit service to students and their families. So we work with children from, first grade, really through adulthood. And we have two primary programs, and we're really, this is our seventh year, and we are loving it. And I'm the founder and director, and then we have, there are 22 of us, so it is no longer my gig. It is a big, organization of super talented people, and we all work together to keep it running.
Okay, so tell me, what are your two main streams of service that you offer?
We offer executive function coaching and academic tutoring. And we actually combine those. Sometimes it's just academic, but rarely. Everything we do is sort of an executive function infused. And then we have social learning programs. And that is very different than our executive function program.
So quickly, because I do want to spend some time talking about the social learning program, but the executive function side and academic tutoring side, you start as young as first grade?
We do. We see, first grade would be, that would be young for us. We're a virtual company, so right. First grade is very young for us. Yeah, I would say that's too young, probably around fourth grade. The bulk of our clients are middle school, high school, college, big college population, and then young adults and adults.
Yeah.
Adults
what about parents?
Businesses or we have a whole, our parents, some of our parents are our clients, actually. They see what we do with their children and then they come to us. We have our social learning program, there is a parent assisted component. And right now we're piloting a parent assisted component for our executive functioning program.
Okay,
so
that's awesome.
We pilot things carefully and we don't jump into services just like, we think we'll become career counselors. We don't do
that. Hey, look
at that. We are piloting the executive function piece and it is very exciting, actually, because it really involves parents.
That's awesome. So let's get into the social learning. So first, kind of tell me how that came about and what it really, if you can just give me the deep dive into what it entails and who are your target students?
Well, I'll tell you that we've always been interested in social emotional learning, and we actually started our program with groups. And we realized, and groups are wonderful, but we realized that in a group, you have six students, all with very diverse learning profiles. And it's a prescribed, becomes a prescribed program, 14 weeks, there's a lesson every week. Well, you'd have six kids or six adolescents, and you'd be doing a lesson on humor. Well, three students understood humor and used it perfectly, and three didn't, but everybody got the lesson on humor. And then we realized we really were not meeting the needs of these students, and that's when we shift to this individual program, which kind of sounds like an oxymoron. How can you have a one-to-one social learning program when social learning is supposed to be with other people? But it has worked out beautifully, and so this is where we are. I don't know that we'll ever go back to groups.
So you have, is it still the 14 lessons then, one-on-one?
Yeah, it's still a 14 program.
And what are some of the lessons? What does that, some of that include?
Oh, it includes, so first of all, can I just tell you how we start our program? And let me go back and answer your question about who the program is for. So the program, we see many, many ADHD, students with ADHD, high-functioning autism spectrum disorder, quirky kids, kids with social communication, pragmatic issues, students who have social anxiety or who are very shy, extraordinarily shy. We just see kids who are quirky and have struggled to make and keep friends and we see lots of kids with no diagnoses. The diagnosis does not, it matters to us if they are diagnosed because it helps guide us. But we don't need a diagnosis to work with a student, and everything is very individualized. So we start with a discovery call, we meet with a student for an hour, and we really get to bond with them, and we get to create goals. We ask lots of questions, they get time to express themselves, and we come up with a series of goals, and we do the same thing with the parent. We meet with them for an hour, so we get their side of how they perceive their child and what they would like to get out of the program. And then we go into our actual program.
How often do you do that discovery call with the parent and the student, and their views on things don't always align, or do they typically align?
I think that with the older student, the high school student, maybe even the college student, they may not align as much. But when push comes to shove and we start working with the student, they very much align. Parents' perspectives are just different than student perspectives.
Right, right. So then you go in, and is it a weekly meeting with is it a coach?
Yeah, we work with, there's one coach. The coach does the discovery call. That same coach is going to work with the client the entire time. Consistency is really important, and forming a relationship with a coach is probably the most important, right? And our programs are very flexible. I mean, we want to hone in on the goals. You had asked earlier, what skills do we work on? We work on everything from perspective taking to more flexible thinking for our black and white thinkers, to lessons on humor, to kids who blurt out and are very touchy, so self-regulation and emotional control. We kids who are socially anxious, who need to also self-regulate. So we work on, and of course, most importantly, making and keeping friends, right? For students who don't have friends, who choose the wrong kind of friends, all of that is very important. And these are some of the things. We talk about similes and metaphors for students who don't understand humor, for example, and it goes over their head. All things conversations, entering them, well, beginning them, sustaining them, sharing them, because some kids over talk about what they want to talk about, right? And that's not fun for the listener. So sharing conversations, and then some people are in a conversation and they decide, oh, I'm bored, I'm leaving. But you just can't exit a conversation that way.
You kind of would like to sometimes, though, right?
You just have to know how to do it. It's okay to do it, but you need a reason why. You know, I have to run,
exactly.
I have a class, or I have to go home for dinner or something, rather than just walking away. So we teach all kinds of social skills, to be honest.
So how do you measure this success? Like, is it just based on, like, you have a check-in partway through, or do the students are just sharing their experiences with you? So, because it is hard to measure that success, right? It's not very measurable.
It is. And actually, we've been trying to quantify our program. And we used to give a rating scale to parents at the beginning and the end of the program. That did not prove successful at all. When we have goals, and we have goals like, making friends, parents are able to see quite clearly whether their child is making progress towards the end result. But I just want to step back for a second, because while we do this social learning, and we do the way that we teach social learning is through a lot of role play, we watch movie clips where we might tease apart a scenario. You know, you have a movie clip, a fun movie clip that even the student might know. Let's say you have a student who is a blurter and just kind of comes in and jumps in the conversation. Well, we'd show a movie clip and we'd really talk about it. And not only are you talking about what the student is doing, but how are other people reacting? Because we want to teach body language and facial expressions and emotions. We want kids to be able to read the room, read the group. So we'll use movie clips as a means, and some kids
That's
love
a great
that.
Way.
If that is not their learning style, then we won't use that. We'll use something else. But in terms of progress, you will see, parents will see their child improve over time. But the way that they really see it is we then, after our session, we give assignments. So you have to apply these skills in real time. We can role play with them and do all of this work, but we give them assignments just like we uniquely create the program around them. We uniquely create all their assignments. You know, maybe they're a young adult who doesn't know how to get involved in a group. Well, we'll brainstorm, we'll look in the community, we'll look on the college campus, find a group that they would like. So we will give assignments that have kids interacting, kids, young adults, I don't know, I guess you could call them clients. It seems so clinical, I don't really like that. We'll have them go and actually apply the strategies that we've been talking about. And then we do up to 2 check-ins a week with them. So we are checking in with them to see, did you do the assignment? I did it. How did it go? It was great. Fantastic. We'll celebrate a success. Or I did the assignment and I bombed. Okay, what happened? Let's tease it apart. Let's go back at it with a new strategy. So we're never giving up, whether it's the kid who can't find somebody to sit with at the lunch table, whether it's the kid who is choosing the wrong friends, the college student who's spending too much time in their room on their computer. I mean, these are all things that we are trying to work on, and we're trying to do what is best for the client and what is most important at the time. So if we have, you know, if a client gets on and we say, how was your day? And they say it was awful. You know, I got into a fight with a friend. We're not going to say, oh, sorry, Susie, it's perspective taking day. No.
Right.
Well, what happened? Let's get to this. This is a really great way. So we're using real life experiences to teach.
Are you finding it harder these days with the more time kids are spending gaming and doing things electronically and there's not as much socialization, or is that just the perspective of a parent of older kids and maybe there is more socialization going on than we realize?
Well, there's always socialization at school, or there's always the opportunity
True.
For socialization at school.
True.
There are students who have no extracurricular activities, so we try to change that because they need, you know, they need a place to be able to respond, to be able to use these strategies. And, you know, these kids all want to make and keep friends. I mean, that is their ultimate goal, even if they say, I'm fine being alone. You know, most of the time, now sometimes, you know, a student does get overwhelmed with a lot of people and wants to be alone, but not alone all the time. And we also, you know, acknowledge that there is a virtual community of some of you know, friends, but there also has to be a real life community of friends. So we need to balance that. You can still do your gaming. We don't work with students who have gaming addictions because we're just not expert. We're not experts, and we're not therapists. We work with students who are in therapy and not in therapy, but we'll work with therapists. But we don't wear the therapy hat. We really wear the social learning hat. I hate the term "stay in your lane," but we do stay in our lane because
it's important.
Important. that we do that.
How much does the social learning overlap with the executive function stuff?
Well, it's interesting, and can I answer that question in a second? I just want to talk about one other piece of our social learning program.
Absolutely.
I think it's important. So we have a non-parent-assisted program, which I just described to you, and we have a parent-assisted program for all of our eighth graders and below. And we do work with kids who are in first, second grade in our social learning program, but the majority are a little bit older. And our parent-assisted program is such a rich program because we're not only meeting with the student an hour a week and checking in with them twice, we're also meeting with a parent for an hour a week. And now we're really talking about strategies that we're using. We're speaking, we're getting language together for reinforcement. We're showing parents, you know, how their child might be responding to them, how they may trigger their child, and how their child may trigger them, and what that looks like. So parents end up learning so much about themselves and their interactions with their child, and we learn so much from the parent's perspective who knows their child so well. So it really is it's a very, very rich and beautiful program. And we do have many high school students who have parent assisted if that's what the parent wants. But I just wanted to add that in.
Well, no, I love that because I think you meet with these students once a week and then you kind of send them off, right? It's a lot like tutoring or anything that you do with a child when you're only seeing them once a week. Yeah. And the parents need to understand how they support them. And so for you to be giving them that language and just digging deeper into the family dynamics and what they're seeing, I think that just makes it so much more effective.
Well, it's interesting because we see the student once a week, we see the parent once a week, and then we do two check-ins. So we're actually checking in with the family four times a week. And I should say, I was talking to some coaches yesterday, and one of them was telling me a story about a girl who called her coach, texted her coach on a Saturday night in the bathroom crying, "I don't know what to do." She had done something, she was at a little party and she said something to a girl and the girl took offense. And of course she did apologize. And she texted her coach and her coach talked her through it, walked her down this very anxiety-provoking moment, got her to calm down, got her to re-enter the party. And so these are things that is considered a check-in. And so sometimes our students check in with our coaches. It works both ways once the relationship is formed.
I love that.
It was really beautiful. They figured it out, and she ended up having a successful rest of the party. But I thought that was a great example of, you know, students reaching out to their coaches. And these are older, you know, you wouldn't expect a sixth grader necessarily to reach out, although some do, but I think it's mainly high schoolers who, you know,
I just think that speaks to the bond that they've developed and the trust, right?
Exactly.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about how the executive function sort of weaves its way through some of this and how you probably do a little emotional learning and social learning in the EF side and then a little bit of EF in the social learning side.
Yeah, I mean, EF just gets interwoven, but we're really careful because our executive function program is really a very unique executive function program. So we are not going to take our social learning client and teach them how to initiate, plan, organize, manage their time. We'll teach them how to regulate their emotions. That's an executive function skill.
That's a huge one.
Attentional, because they have to pay attention. But the EF side of things, we don't want to water down our social learning program. So some of our clients will do both social learning and executive functioning. Sometimes with the same coach, if we're fortunate enough to have a coach that does, we have two coaches that do both those disciplines. And if not, then they just have two different coaches. But we will address, but we can't. If we did work on, and of course initiation is something we do work on in social learning because they have to initiate, take the risk, feel confident to do some of the things we're asking them to do. So that, you know, so yes, EF is woven in, but not as explicitly as our EF program.
Well, and initiating a conversation is a little bit different than initiating a task that you're dreading.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not, but it is, I think. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I guess if you're dreading the conversation, it might be.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, most of our students are not dreading social learning. They're kind of looking forward to it. Although periodically we do get somebody that really doesn't want it. We try, this is why we have the discovery call. We try to ferret out students who are doing this for their parents. And they'll be honest, I am doing this for my parent. And we'll get on with the parents and say, it's not the right time. We don't want to drag them through this. And, you know, we don't want you to waste your money. You're not going to be happy with us. We're not going to be happy with your child. Your child's not happy with us. No one wins. So, you know, that's.
So what happens when a student goes through the 14 sessions? They've hit on all the topics. They sort of graduate then. Do they check in with you later? Do you have follow-ups with them?
I would have said no yesterday, but I'm mistaken because yesterday that question came up. I was in a collaboration meeting with some social learning coaches, and they said, you know, our time does not end after 14 weeks. So let me just step back and say, we have many of our clients will rebook another 14 sessions. If they do parent-assisted, maybe they don't do parent-assisted the second round. But 14 weeks, it is a good amount of time to get a lot of work done. But there's so much work sometimes that two, even three sessions, doesn't have to be that way, happens. If they finish in 14 weeks and say, you know, we're done, thank you, love the program, there are students who will reconnect with their coaches. They'll either send a picture of them going camping or on, you know, kayaking or going to the prom. So I get these pictures around this time from coaches. Look at so-and-so, you know, going to our
That's
first
awesome.
Or a birthday party or something. So,
right.
And of course, coaches are not going to say no to that. And of course, they'll stay in touch. But I think that it's hard for us to continue to have a relationship after the 14 weeks because we're not seeing them anymore.
Right.
But as I
right.
said, if kids do check in, and I'm sure that coaches periodically check in with some of their
How
students.
How can you not?
Perhaps these
How can you not?
Close relationships with. Yeah.
Is your executive function coaching structured similarly in that it's got a certain number of weeks, or is it more tailored to the student's needs?
It's very individualized. We do the same thing. We have a discovery call for an hour with the student. And by the way, all of this is predicated on an inquiry that somebody from the team is taking with the parents or with the young adult. You know, I speak to college students on a regular basis who are telling me their story. This is what I need. We love those kids because they're really motivated. But we start with the discovery call to create our goals. So it's unique to the student. And then we book in packages of 10 sessions, 20, 30, and 40. And you know, that is that's a big rebook business, of course, because it's rare when we see a student for only 10 sessions. And not that we see kids for life, but we do see, we tend to see, you know, kids over, you know, two to four packages. Typically.
Yeah, that's a question I get asked a lot when we talk about coaching at the follow-up appointment when we're making our recommendations. Parents always want to know how many sessions are you thinking or does this take? And I'm like, well, you know, every student's different. I said, but at the end of the day, your job is to work yourself out of a job, right? Like
right.
You want them to become independent. You don't want them to be dependent on you forever. So your goal is to eventually set them free, but you're not going
to
do it until they're ready.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we don't keep kids on just to keep kids on. I mean, we wouldn't have anything to do anyway. I mean, once they start to direct their own sessions, we're kind of done unless they choose to stay with us. And, you know, we have high flyers who we meet with once a week who say, would you just organize me for the week? I've got so much on my plate. And that's what we do. But really in our executive function work, we really are teaching very specific executive function skills, but they're always based on content. It doesn't matter if it's academic content, if it's project-based, if it's routines, schedules, calendaring. There's always something to attach these executive function skills to. I mean, it'd be like me saying, let me teach you how to play pickleball. And then I tell you, and you get out on the court, what are you going to know? You'll be an expert in history, you'll be an expert in rules, and you won't know the first thing about how to play. So it has to be, and that's why we do, executive functioning through sort of tailored tutoring. So some of our students need reading comprehension and written language or math or whatever it might be. Others, we have coaches who teach Spanish and never have spoken Spanish in their life. And they use Spanish because to learn something requires a system and requires a strategy, and you can apply it to biology, science, Spanish, doesn't make any difference. Our goal is to provide students with strategies that they use, and we do 2 check-ins a week with them too. Typically we see them twice a week, and then we do 2 check-ins, and then we speak with the parent every other week for 15 or 20 minutes to get their take. And as I said, we are about to develop the parent executive portion of the executive function program, but we're just not quite there yet.
Is study skills part of executive function, or is it separate?
Absolutely. Study skills, test-taking strategies, absolutely, yeah.
We have a lot of that.
Time management, what is your plan for studying? So we will get everybody on a calendar, of course. We get on everybody's portals. We look at their, all of their assignments, and we do all the chunking down, just like many executive function companies do, right? There's nothing special, but a lot of us do that work. I think what differentiates us is we have created something called MAPS. It's called, MAP stands for Mindset, Awareness, Planning, and Strategy. We do a lot of mindset work because we see a lot of kids who are very resistant. They really don't want to do executive function coaching. And if we can establish a relationship and we can have them trust us, then we can work on motivation, and we can work on confidence, we can work on resiliency, and then awareness of your strengths and your challenges and whatever habits you have, that really shape who you are, and try to do some shifting of that so that they see things a little bit differently. And then, of course, all the strategies, study skill, test taking, note-taking, annotating, whatever it might be.
Do you find that your kids that are more resistant are less self-aware, and that they just don't think that there's an issue to be dealt with?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of kids are not aware of what their profile's like. They're not even so much that aware of their strengths, of the strength that they have that they could use to their advantage to combat some of their weaknesses.
This
or
is true.
Take advantage of accommodations. See a lot of kids, no, I don't want to take advantage of that extra time, or I don't want to use speech to text. And so it's our job to try to show them that this is okay for them to become advocates. I mean, we always get kids' emails because their college professors are going to write them. Some of their high school coaches might write them. And if they never check their email, they're never going to see any of that. So we want to build these, early strategies, early on in the process, so that they just automatically know that they're going to check their email. And also delete all those that are irrelevant.
So you work with kids across the U.S.?
Across the U.S. and around the world. Around the world sounds really sexy, but it's challenging because we're 12 hours difference. We do have a coach in Portugal, so that helps us a little bit. But it's harder to, it's harder to work with people out of the country. But, we make it happen.
Are your coaches then kind of located across the country?
They are primarily on the East Coast. We have a coach in Texas. We have a coach in Ohio. And then right down the East Coast, Tennessee. We have them in a number of different states. Yeah, most are from New England. We are from New England, but
not everybody.
We really are a virtual business. One of the things I was speaking to an EF coach yesterday, and she was talking about young children. Our fourth graders, our third graders, and ways to work with them, particularly over the summer. And she was really talking about having parents get kids to create what they want for dinner and make a list for shopping, to make their dentist
appointment,
to order their food in a restaurant. And she started to list these things, and I was like, wow, that is incredible. I mean, if kids could do that early on, think of, you know, using the phone. There are so many kids that are afraid to use the phone. But to take a responsibility for the things that parents usually take responsibility for, but have the parent oversee it, so we make sure that it's, they're not making their own doctor's appointments, but they know that this is the process that we go through and we do it. And what she said was the students that she worked with feel so proud of themselves. They like feel so adult to be able to do more adult things rather than having their parents do everything for them. And, you know, I mean, I did a lot for my children. That is for sure. But when I think about what she said, it really was just set a light off in my mind thinking, that's very, very cool. I really like that.
I do too. And I like that because when you think about summer, we're not in school. So there's not a lot to apply a lot of the executive function type, you know, strategies to, because you're not keeping up with homework and all the things. But that's a great time to start doing some of those more independent, passing on some things for them to do more independently.
So we actually see a lot of students over the summer, and we use projects, we use routines, morning, evening routines. We work on projects, whether it be something that they've created. We've worked on cleaning someone's room, but not just telling them where to put things, but putting together a system. Everything is very collaborative with us. If we're going to clean a room, it's like, how do you want your room to look? Let's start at the end and work to the beginning. And then we can decide where things go, but we need a system. So we do, you know, everything requires, if you think about it, everything requires starting, planning, organizing, and finishing things in a timely fashion. It's all EF, almost everything we do. Whether it is in the grocery store and we're aimlessly going up and down aisles, some people do that. Most people have a better way
That's not a bad way.
It's not a bad way, but you're likely to come out with things that you didn't anticipate coming out with going down those aisles.
And forget the things you need.
But anyway, what I'm saying is that we come up with all kinds of projects that students...
I love that.
Chores, mowing the lawn, raking leaves, you know? I mean, it sounds really funny, but you should see me with a leaf blower. I'm like all over. And what I really need is somebody to say, no, this is where you start, and this is how you go through that. It's a system. And it would always take me so much longer. But anyway, just to give you an example.
No, and that I really like that. And I like the way you said that, that really everything we do has an EF undertone to it, right? Like everything requires some level of executive functioning. And so sometimes just pigeonholing it to school or work isn't really fair. And it doesn't help it then carry over into your day-to-day life. So you're right. Summer might be the best time to do it because you have those non-academic activities that hopefully all the practice all summer then carries over.
It's
like, remember
so
how
true.
We cleaned your room? We're going to attack this project, this paper, the same way.
Exactly. And then it becomes a habit. And once it becomes a habit, you no longer need Frankenberger Associates. So you're right. We want kids to ultimately move on and be independent and then email us to say, you won't believe this. And then we can get excited and feel really proud of ourselves and proud of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if parents are interested in your programs, the best way for them to find you would be probably your website, I would imagine.
Our website, for sure. And there's a contact page. They can always call the office. Frankenberger Associates, and
I'll put the link to the website in the show notes, so they'll have access to it. And that way, if they want to reach out, they can either do the contact form or call you. Either way, and I would assume you're scheduling sessions all year round. There's not like a start time and an end time. It's just individualized as you go.
We schedule them all year and at all times.
That is so fabulous.
Yeah.
Gosh, I might need to be a client.
We have seen many a business owner and many a medical resident student. I mean, we work with people who are extraordinarily successful, but just really struggle to kind of balance their work, which is so important, and their other life's responsibilities, and it can be overwhelming for all of us. You know, with or without EF issues, life can be overwhelming.
Right. Yeah, the overwhelm is what gets you. It's the overwhelm.
Of course.
Yeah, it can bring you
anxiety
down.
And then the anxiety takes over the productivity. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking time out of your day. We could talk longer, but I'm going to let you get, I know you've got to get back to work. I'm trying to be timely and efficient, but I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm so glad we connected last week. You are going to be an amazing resource for our families. I'm thrilled to have you. So I will make sure that your website is linked in our show notes. Listeners, if you have any questions for me or for Carol, you can always reach out to me at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. Have a great rest of your day. Carol, thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.